Welcome to Today in Space. We're here to cover our reaction after the latest Starship test flight from SpaceX. It took flight on March 14th and took off within the first launch window that it was given. It was an amazing test. We're going to talk about it. But we're also going to talk about what Starship is, because I think it's a great time to recap the scale of what they're trying to do here at SpaceX. And we're also going to talk about the why of the test and talk about why it was such a success, and also why Starship is important for the future, not only for NASA and some of the upcoming missions and things like Dear Moon and other missions and getting to Mars within, you know, this century, but it's also about how it's going to push the industry towards, I think, rethinking how we do space and just getting into that iterative mindset of test, learn, advance, test, and we're all about it here. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the what and the why of Starship. Thanks for joining us. Before we start, let's do a little bit of business here. You can follow us on social media at Today in Space on TikTok, Today in Space Pod on Instagram and Twitter/X, and our Facebook page, Today in Space Podcast. And you can always email us at todayinspacepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to know what you're interested in space. Again, this podcast is all things space. So really, if you guys want to dive into anything, if you want to learn something new, we're here for it. You know, we bring what we're interested here in the podcast, what gets us inspired and excited about space, to then pass that on. Anything you'd like to cover more in depth, hit us up anywhere online. If you want to jam and you're looking for a space playlist, we've got you covered over on Spotify. Check out the Space Mix. It's our free Spotify playlist filled with songs all about space. And it's not just some of the folks that you've, you know, the classics like David Bowie and John Williams, but it's also people and new artists you haven't heard of. And every song has something to do with space and science, but it's a jam. It's a really good playlist to listen to whether you're stargazing on a long drive or getting pumped up for the next Starship launch. It's there for you. So the Space Mix, go check it out. And email us todayinspacepodcast@gmail.com for any new submissions to that playlist. We're always looking for more. Send them over to us and we'll add them there. So check out the Space Mix on Spotify. Again, it's available for free and something built for all of us to enjoy. We listen to that every time we start this podcast. So we love it. We hope you do too. All right, so let's get into it. What is Starship? And I think that's a really good place for us to start, because I think we need a recap. I think there's all these space nerds out there and space enthusiasts and people that actually work in the industry, people who work at SpaceX or who've just been following along for a while. And I know I'm speechless, or was speechless. Now it's finally time for me to be able to get it out. But it's been a long time that a lot of us space nerds have been following this, and we know a lot about it, and we know what SpaceX is trying to do to become multiplanetary. We'll explain that in a second. But it's a great time for a recap. So Starship is this heavy lift rocket system that was built specifically for the purpose that SpaceX has around reusable rocket technology, you know, dropping the cost of launching something into space, because as we've done it over 50 years, basically the first stage of the rocket will take whatever payload it is that you're taking into space. Almost 100% of the time before, those rockets were never recovered. They were one use. You flew it, you tossed it, because that was efficient. You could use all the fuel, get as much power. There was a reason for it. Get as much power as you could to the thing you're trying to send into orbit and into space. And that worked for a while. It especially worked when rocket technology was backed by national defense funding, like we had in the first space race and the Cold War with Russia and the race to the moon. Now, in order to have an industry, an aerospace industry, a space industry that will then eventually have a space economy where people are paying to go to space, whether it's drug research or sending humans to learn more about that, exploration reasons like going to the moon and to Mars and pushing the bounds of space, we need it to become more economical. And what SpaceX focused on was reusability. The space shuttle had done it before. SpaceX isn't doing anything different, but the thing that made the shuttle difficult for an economic reason was it was so expensive to reuse it and to get it back out there every single time. It was a complicated, amazing, beautiful piece of engineering, and part of the reason why I went to school for aerospace engineering in the first place and why this podcast exists. But it wasn't economical, and it didn't provide the promise which it gave from the very beginning, which was to open up the space economy and make sending things to orbit cheaper from this function of reusability. It's like flying a plane, and only your ticket price is the price of flying that plane once and then dumping it. It's a lot more expensive. So the reason that we can all fly at a cheaper rate is because they're using these airplanes all the time and reusing them, giving them the fixes when they need it, but keeping them flying. That's where space travel needs to go for humanity to be able to live and work in space constantly. So Starship not only does that, because we've got Crew Dragon especially, right? For NASA, it's the ship that NASA is sending their own astronauts to the International Space Station. There's going to be a lot of missions like Polaris Dawn. There was Inspiration 4, the first private, the first all-citizen flight that actually went higher than the International Space Station in orbit and in altitude. All these missions are possible with, you know, 4 to 5 people, basically. I think 6 is the maximum that you could get with anything that's like a capsule that we send to space. Starship was built to house up to 100 people. And I'll repeat that. We're going from Crew Dragon, the best available technology for sending humans into space right now, into low Earth orbit, into the space station, 4 to 6 people maximum if they added another seat, right? Technically, they've even tested that they could do a 7th person if they strapped them to the bottom of the Crew Dragon floor, of course, only in emergency where that's the only ship that can bring people back. But still, a total of 7. Starship will bring 100 people. Now, why would you do 100 people? That seems kind of crazy. Well, the way that we're trying to explore space right now, to go to the moon and to go to Mars, all the plans involve some version of either sending a like already built structure that will be launched and landed on, let's say, the moon, and then astronauts will be sent to put it together and make it work. There's a lot of inflatable technology today that could make that kind of thing possible, but that's a lot of launches. That's a lot of money to develop all those things. There's also amazing options like 3D printing with the soil on the moon or on Mars. That's something one of our latest guests, Madison Feehan from Space Copy. That's what her company is planning to do, to help 3D print these structures ahead of time so that astronauts could get there. But think about all the things we have to build in order to go to the moon and go to Mars. There's nothing there right now, so we've got to build all of it. And if we're going to do this within the century, and if we're going to allow human exploration to other planets without needing the building that's in place, that's different than, say, Apollo 11, right? Apollo 11 had the lander, it came down, and then they took off from the lander and went back up to orbit to dock with the capsule to go back home. Well, what, and this is what SpaceX thought, what if we could make a reusable spacecraft that could house up to 100 people, that would go up to orbit, get fueled by a bunch of tankers that would come up so it's full of fuel before the trip, and then go on to the moon, to Mars, land, and then this 100-person, for lack of a better word, arc or colony gets to go place to place and launch back. So basically, you are traveling. SpaceX allows you to skip all of the infrastructure building that you would need, for the most part, to have this dream of going to space like we have. You skip all of it, and this becomes your building. This becomes what you send people in, what they live in, and what they fly back home in to then land when they get back there. And so Flight Test 3 Folks, let's take a quick break and talk about our 3D printing lab, AG 3D Printing. You can go check out our work over at AG 3D Printing on Instagram and TikTok, and you can also check out our work at ag3d-printing.com. That's where you can get a free quote for your next project and see what we've done to help other companies and people bring their ideas into reality, like our friends over at Snapcaller. We helped them develop some of the early stages of what is now their product that they're selling to fix the untidy collar for good. And so we love doing that, and we love just being the 3D printing lab for you. If you have anything you want to make or design or anything like that, go check out everything we're doing over there. We're always welcome to give you a free quote or point you in the right direction for a better way to make whatever it is you're looking to do. And then we have our Etsy shop, ag3dprinting.etsy.com, and we have been 3D printing away like crazy. Pretty soon, we are going to have our James Webb Space Telescope model up there, but that's still in the works, and we'll keep you up to date on that. But we also have our James Webb Space Telescope coasters, some great gifts for the space nerd in your life, whether it's you or someone you love and know. And of course, there is our Starship 3D printed pen. And this is one of the early prototypes, but we'll show you a video of our latest build, and really it's come a long way. We're using two different 3D printing technologies to make this: plastic filament 3D printing, FFF, and resin cured SLA 3D printing for the engine stack. And we have been really, really, really lucky. People have been buying them online. It seems like every Starship test, we get another order. So we really appreciate everyone supporting us there. It's cool. It's our first real piece of premium merch. You know, we put a lot of love into it. It's not at all related to SpaceX. It's just a space nerd, you know, making some SpaceX-inspired Starship and James Webb Space Telescope stuff. So it helps support this podcast. It keeps the lights on. It helps us move towards a future where we will be able to do more and more with Today in Space, even go down a star base in Texas and see this monster in real life. But until then, check us out, ag3d-printing.com for your next 3D printing project, and ag3dprinting.etsy.com and for your next space nerd gift. And as always, thanks for supporting us. All right, and now my reaction to Starship IFT3. Test Flight 3 was really, really interesting. And so let's talk about some facts here. I'm going right to the SpaceX page, spacex.com/launches. And this is the mission, Starship Flight 3. Starship returned to integrated flight testing with its third launch from Starbase in Texas. While it didn't happen in a lab or on a test stand, it was absolutely a test. What we achieved on this flight will provide invaluable data to continue rapidly developing Starship. On March 14th, 2024, Starship successfully lifted off at 8:25 a.m. Central Time from Starbase in Texas and went on to accomplish several major milestones and firsts. For the second time, all 33 Raptor engines on the Super Heavy booster started up successfully and completed a full duration burn during ascent. That's huge. They didn't do that on the first test. Starship executed its second successful hot stage separation, powering down all but three of Super Heavy's Raptor engines and successfully igniting the six second stage Raptor engines before separating the vehicles. So they did a hot separation where while the first stage was still attached, Super Heavy, they lit those six engines on Starship so that it could separate and get it on its way to orbit. Following separation, the Super Heavy booster successfully completed its flip maneuver and completed a full boost back burn to send it towards its splashdown point in the Gulf of Mexico. And Super Heavy successfully lit several engines for its first ever landing burn before the vehicle experienced an RUD, that's SpaceX speak for Rapid Unscheduled Disassembly, a fancy way of saying it blew up. The booster's flight concluded at approximately 462 meters in altitude and just under 7 minutes into the mission. But again, to recap, most rockets, almost entirely all rockets before Starship, aside from Falcon 9 and, say, Blue Origin and their reusable rocket, all of those rockets were doomed to go into the ocean. and not necessarily be reused. Companies like Rocket Lab are starting to recover their smaller scale rockets from the ocean, but SpaceX's Starship is incredibly heavy and made of stainless steel, so it's very hard to do. And the first Falcon 9 flights, before they became a regular thing, doing 96 flights, and the first booster reaching 20 reflights, those all went into the ocean, and a lot of them failed on the way there. But that's the iterative approach that SpaceX takes, and it's something that's very different in the industry. Starship's six second-stage Raptor engines all started successfully and powered the vehicle to its expected orbit, becoming the first Starship to complete its full-duration ascent burn. While coasting, Starship accomplished several of the flight test's additional objectives, including the opening and closing of the payload door, aka the PEZ dispenser, that's a scientific term, and initiating a propellant transfer demonstration. Starship did not attempt its planned on-orbit reflight of a single Raptor engine because the vehicle roll rate during the coast. So when they had gotten up there, and we saw this with a lot of the footage, Starship was rolling, and some really amazing people on Twitter who are very talented with tracking and just taking a piece of footage and telling you what's really happening. Starship luckily had a camera on the end of its flaps here, and while those flaps were moving to help it go into the atmosphere, we could see down Starship, so we got to see the Earth, and you could see that Starship was just kind of in this roll. So I don't know if that meant there was a fuel leak and that was causing it to turn, or if the attitude control system, which I've heard a lot of people online state, that just wasn't working. And so Starship was kind of in this constant roll up in orbit. Regardless, though, Starship went on to experience its first ever re-entry from space, providing valuable data on heating and vehicle control during hypersonic re-entry. And the live views of re-entry were made possible by the Starlink terminals that were operating on Starship. So I believe this was the first time ever that the plasma buildup of re-entry, of that hypersonic compressible fluids thing that, as an aerospace engineer, I learned, we saw graphs of it and interpretations of it, and we knew the theory behind it and how to calculate the force that it was experiencing, the heat that it's experiencing. But to see that streamed live in HD with basically the only reason the video cut out is because the plasma blanket from reentry disrupted the signal from the Starlinks in orbit that were communicating with Starship, also in orbit, deorbiting through the atmosphere to come back to Earth. And the flight's test conclusion came during entry, and the last telemetry signals received via the Starlink from Starship at approximately 49 minutes into the mission. So that's what happened on Test Flight 3. That's a lot of things that were successful in a test flight. And the reason why we believe that Starship's third test flight was so successful, and there's a lot of people calling it a failure or they lost Starship. The reality is that as of the morning before flight on March 14th, the best that SpaceX had ever done was to launch Starship and Super Heavy, light all 33 engines, hot separate the Starship from Super Heavy, and then continue on its way to orbit. But it did not get much further than that first test. But instead of just progressing linearly, right, just maybe having half of the stuff that had here, this Pi Day mission went above and beyond the progress that they've had from the first two flights and accelerates them at light speed towards what they need to do for the future. So this is where, this is why we think it's a success. There's a lot that Starship is being relied on for, and this is another reason why Starship is so important. Starship is going to be used and is being used for NASA's human landing system. They were chosen as the first human landing system that Artemis is going to be using to go back to the moon. Artemis, which is the next program of NASA following Apollo, to go back to the moon. And this is all built around this thing that we should get to the point, if we're going to build a space economy, if we're going to advance in space exploration and make life interplanetary, like what SpaceX's mission statement is all about. NASA is building the infrastructure for us to be able to go to the moon, and then once we build and learn and get better to go into the moon, we use that ability and build the next infrastructure to go to Mars. And Mars is difficult because it basically takes 9 months to get there, and then you have a small window in which you can return immediately to fly back. And if you don't, you need to wait until the next time that opportunity comes back to fly back. So Mars is way riskier than going to the moon. Artemis 1 happened last 2 years ago. The first test was sending Orion to the moon and around and re-entering the atmosphere and giving NASA the data it needs for Artemis 2, which is happening as of right now next year in 2025. And that's going to be sending the first woman, the first person of color, and the first Canadian, including astronaut Reid Wiseman of NASA. All three of these astronauts will be going to orbit around the moon for the first time since Apollo program ended. Then Apollo 3 happens, and that's where Starship needs to be ready. And Starship is going to require much more testing. And this test has brought them so much closer to it being used and the data being analyzed by NASA to send on Artemis 3 the astronauts on the Orion capsule to dock with Starship, and then Starship needs to go down to the moon, land, and then reignite the engines to fly back to Orion capsule, where the crew will get off and go home back to Earth. That would be the first time that would be used with humans on board to touch down on the moon, instead of relying on the whole thing to go from Earth on Starship and then to the moon and back. NASA's using it as a landing system. And it's picked Blue Origin and Blue Moon as the organization building the next human landing system. And we've got companies like Astrobotics and all these other companies that are doing things for NASA to build the infrastructure, to land things on the moon and get back into the rhythm of it, because it's been over 50 years and we have to do this again. And we've seen on all the latest human missions, on all the latest lunar missions, that China, India, Russia, Israel, Japan, us, all of these countries have been trying to land on the moon lately, and only India, China, and Japan have done it successfully. It just shows you that the moon is very hard. And so this test flight 3 doesn't prove that they're going to make it to the moon, but this test brings them so much closer, so much quicker than the rate of progress that was happening before. So Starship is super important for us to get to the moon again. It's also not locked into governmental funding and taxpayer money, where Starship is going to be funding a lot of its development with sending Starlink satellites into orbit. And that's where the real beauty of Test Flight 3 is we really saw the full, in some ways, the full architecture, the infrastructure of what SpaceX is doing just for themselves, but also in a way where the industry could access this information too, right? This rocket is going to be taking up these Starlink satellites into space so that it's cheaper for them. It's going to be able to fill out the full constellation so that the entire globe would be able to access the internet. Places that can't get land wires for internet, they're able to get it from space, from Starlink. But also, these Starlinks are going to be helping them get all of this data, all of this live HD streaming and video, because of these satellites in space connecting it. And which means you don't need ground stations to be able to do that, which is basically how we do it now. And then that's going to make it so that if NASA finds itself, we're blessed right now. We're in this place where NASA has so much great things going on. Funding is being allocated. Yes, there's a layoff at JPL, and there are different projects right now because there are cuts. But the space industry is booming right now, where when we first started this podcast, it was not. So if that ends up turning around and that momentum dries up from NASA, SpaceX has the opportunity to continue progressing towards sending humans into space, long term. So in a lot of ways, this flight test just brings us that much closer to a more robust future for the progress of space that isn't tied to, you know, political whims or government funding or taxpayer money, right? If the U.S. decides, like we did in the Apollo program, that space isn't important anymore. That has happened before in the past. It's not impossible. And Starship and what SpaceX is doing really helps us stay away from a future where we could lose all of that progress again. So that's a lot to say that the Flight Test 3 was amazing. I was speechless at first. Clearly, I had a lot to say. But thank you all for joining me. We'd love to know what you think here in the podcast. If you stayed this long, thank you. We love you. But we'd love to hear from you since you're a hardcore fan. We'd love to know what you thought about the Test Flight 3. We'd love to know what you're excited about in the future. And even if there are things where you thought they could have done better, we'd like that feedback. So hit us up, todayinspacepodcast@gmail.com. And of course, on social media, Today in Space on TikTok, Today in Space Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and our Facebook page at Today in Space Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Spread love and spread science, and we'll be back for another episode of Today in Space. See ya.